Engineering Radio, building extraordinary relationships with your show hosts, Thomas and Patricia Strausser. This will be an uplifting hour filled with information, inspiring interviews, and music to connect you to your own spiritual energy. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this show that could transform your life.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Wednesday morning show, Spiritual Engineering, the New Science for Happiness and Extraordinary Relationships, with Patricia Strausser and with my husband, Thomas Strausser. Strausser, he's here, actually. Thank you for being with us in this beautiful, almost autumn morning. It's getting chilly. The time is changing. And we will have an incredible show today. We want to thank Cosmic Citizen for allowing us the opportunity to do this weekly show.
Yes, and today we have a special guest, a very well-known Christian singer, Mark Schultz, will be with us.
Yes, a very interesting character. He has done a lot of incredible things with his life, his minister, and he had an incredible song, Letters from World, and he will tell us more about it. And he wrote a book also, and we will have Mark in the last section of our show today.
And we will be talking about something very special today, since the seasons are changing, and we will be talking about
change. And we also have a chat line. If you want to talk to us, you want to communicate, you have to send your questions, your opinions. We're here to listen to you. Again, welcome to Spiritual Engineering, the New Science for Happiness and Extraordinary Relationships with Tom and Patricia Strausser. And let's cut down to the cheese. Is that how they say?
Cut to the chase.
Oh, I thought it was the cheese.
Chase. Cut to the chase.
Okay. Well, the chase. Change. We are approaching another season of the year, and this is a beautiful time of the year where the leaves of the trees start to take in that gold, yellow, orange color. It's truly an spectacular display of colors where modern nature makes the best to show herself. And these changes happen in a very regular basis. We know what they come in, we prepare for them. But we cannot say the same in regards to changing in our behavior or those behaviors that create trouble or emotional turmoil in our lives. It's more difficult to really make a decision to change. Sometimes we say we're going to make a change, but that doesn't happen. Sometimes we tell another person, I'm going to change. For instance, if someone has a behavior, a problem, that is creating that turmoil in the marriage, they can say, I'm going to change, and they make mistakes. What is the difference between a pattern and a habit? To introduce this concept of changing, what people believe, what we say, and what we do, and not what we say.
Well, there's a difference between habits and patterns and mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, and that's just part of life. If we do something, we make mistakes. That's the way we learn. I've said before that any wisdom I have almost always comes from mistakes. We learn wisdom by experience, and part of that experience is mistakes. But that's quite different than a pattern. A pattern of behavior is when we do it over and over again, when we repeat it. And as we develop these patterns from the time we're small, time we're very small, we develop these emotional response patterns. When something happens, we respond a certain way. And when we have these patterns deeply ingrained in us, they're very difficult to change. Mistakes... you can generally overcome a mistake and make a change, but you can't. It's very difficult to change patterns in our life, and so they're quite different things. So, in a relationship or whatever, if we're observing somebody at work, how they affect our life, or in Public office is a real good example. You know, these people, everybody has these patterns. So we have to be very aware of the patterns. And like you said, Patty, it's people believe what I do more than what I say. And that's one of the things I've had to learn in life, that I have to judge people's actions. I can't judge their motives, their soul, or their destiny or anything, but I have to judge their actions. And that's why I've really come to believe, really, that we judge other people and we evaluate their impact on our life by what they do, not by what they say. People can promise anything and say they're going to change, say they're going to do this, say they're, you know, whatever they're going to do, but it's what they do that is the proof. We've got to look beyond what they say and look at what their actual actions are. And in my life, in this relationship we have, we believe what each other does, what we demonstrate, not what we say. And we try to live with real congruency. We try to do what we say. We try to live that and keep that, you know, pretty unified.
But sometimes it's just difficult, as you say, because we may be embracing a spiritual life and aligning ourselves with universal principles of universal love and harmony and really trying to do God's will. But these patterns that you talk, and that's what I want to start this conversation, making that distinction, because it is so powerful. We need to learn how to identify these patterns in our behavior and really taking that honest look at ourselves and see what we need to change, and not only making a commitment to change, but also don't we need a process?
Have to have a process. And we'll talk about that in a minute. There's five things that are required for change, five factors that has to be in place before anyone can change these patterns. Not the mistakes, the patterns, before these deeply ingrained patterns. And those patterns we see sometimes as addictions or alcoholism or dependency upon, you know, certain patterns of behavior, anger, you know, we get into the pattern, into that emotional response pattern of being angry or reacting with anger, reacting with fear, reacting with guilt.
And that is so programmed in our mind that we don't even recognize what is happening.
No, it's an unconscious decision. Mm-hmm. It has become a pattern, a response, an emotional response habit that is second nature. And I've said before, when I started working on this, you know, it was amazing. I never made a decision to get angry.
Right.
Something would happen, I'd be angry. Just like that. I'd just go. I never made a conscious choice. And so many of these ingrained patterns involve unconscious choices. We just unconsciously go that direction. We choose to go that direction, and we end up angry, guilty, lonely, afraid, anxious, worried, all these different things. Or these patterns can be reflected, as I said, like addictions or alcoholism or I got to smoke a joint to relax. I got to smoke a joint to do this. Or I've got to get a drink before I can socialize.
Or take a pill to go to sleep.
All these patterns. And if we think these patterns are interfering with our life, it's very difficult to change. They are very difficult to change.
And also we have the tendency to rationalize these patterns, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. Because we make these choices of these patterns. They become ingrained choices. I mean, ingrained patterns, unconscious choices. And we make them with our mind. You know, our mind, you know, when are young, you know, we say, well, we see other people reacting this way, and they become our role models or whatever, and these patterns become ingrained. But we do this in our mind, and these patterns are always justified and rationalized by our mind. Our self-will, our self-driven will, ego, some people call it, pushes. And we make these decisions and make these choices, and then our mind, of course, rationalizes them and justifies them. So all this occurs in our mind, and that's why our mind, this mental arena that we have, is just so important. We live and die in this mental arena, the choices that we make. We choose God or forsake Him. We choose peace, or we choose serenity, or we choose to let other people push our buttons over and over and over. We choose. And once we keep choosing, we set up these patterns. These patterns of response, and that's what's difficult to change. But we can be changed. There's, as I said, there's five things that have to be in place before we can change them. But they change all the time. Look at the alcoholic. I mean, that is a deeply ingrained pattern. But that pattern can be changed by the use of spiritual power.
You know, honey, while you were talking, I was thinking about the transformation that occurs when we embrace a spiritual life. And some people talk about these sudden awakenings of the spirit where these ingrained behaviors are taken away by the power of God, of the power of energy, that is spiritual energy that lives inside each one of us. And some people can experience those kind of transformations. They can be, but we're talking about very specific behavioral, like addiction to drugs, to alcoholism, addiction to other kind of tendencies, innate tendencies that we have. So within these five requirements, better say, for change, we need to identify what is really working for us. And I think that you found something interesting right there.
Yeah, we dearly love the Urantia book, and I love the part in there. And this is so interesting because this is one of my favorite parts on page 1738 in the old edition or whatever you want to call it. But let me warn you against the folly of undertaking to surmount temptation by the effort of supplanting one desire by another and supposedly superior desire by the mere force of human will. If you would be truly triumphant over the temptations of a lesser and lower nature, you must come to that place of spiritual advantage where you truly develop an actual interest in and love for the higher and more idealistic forms of conduct which your mind desires to substitute. Now listen to this. You will in this way be delivered through spiritual transformation rather than the increasingly overburdened with the deceptive suppression of a mortal desire. The old and inferior will be forgotten in the love of a new and superior. Beauty is always triumphant over ugliness in the hearts of those who are illuminated by this love of truth. There is a mighty power in the expulsive energy of a new and sincere spiritual affection. I want to read all that to get that last sentence.
Yes.
There is a mighty power in the expulsive energy of a new and sincere spiritual affection. And that's what you were talking about.
Right.
That overnight transformation, that tremendous transformation where it happens, and it is an expulsive energy. It is a power, a spiritual transformation.
But how this is great, because it really makes the distinction between the believer and the non-believer, the believer and the non-believer. The believer has to start out believing that there is a power, a higher power, that it will help him to change that behavior. But for someone who doesn't believe in any higher power, they need a process. They need a process to make this change permanent in their lives.
That's right. And this expulsive power that it talks about there in the Urantia book, it is an energy, it is a power, and it can overcome that. And that's one part of this, and that's one way to find these changes. But as we mentioned, you know, when we have these deeply ingrained patterns, they're very difficult, because our mind, as you said, rationalizes and justifies the pattern. Our mind is what keeps the alcoholic or the addict in denial. Oh, well, I'm not that bad. I'm not that bad. You know, I may be dying, but I'm not that bad.
But I'm not dead yet.
No, I'm not dead yet. Or I may be ruining my relationship, but it's all somebody else's fault, of course.
Yeah.
But we rationalize and justify what our actions are. And we have to realize we're using our mind, the thing that's causing the problem, to evaluate the problem. And that's very dangerous.
And I really need to apologize. I don't need to take this problem or alcoholism and addiction so lightly. It's just I was kind of laughing at the way that our mind works.
Those
addictions, truly, they destroy lives. And we have a lot of sympathy and compassion for people who suffer from those diseases. And let's mention the five factors required for change, and we're just going to mention today, and next week we're going to go one by one and trying to explain them.
Okay. Number one, we have to accept the problem. Number two, we have to want to solve the problem. Then we have to identify a solution that actually works. And four, then we implement the solution, do the work. And five, do the maintenance. We have to do maintenance. All five of those have to be in place before any long-lasting and effective change is going to happen. All five of them.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, and then we're going to have our interview with Mark Schultz.
This beautiful.
Good morning, Mark.
And,
are you there?
Are you still there?
I am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Just, I watched this beautiful video when you, and it really touched me. I was on tears because I truly believe that the message that you have is so different. And I know that you are a Christian author and songwriter, and now you have this amazing book, Letters from the War, and it has an amazing story behind it. Can you tell us more about this story?
Yeah, my my great-grandma actually lived during World War II times. She had three sons that were in World War II, and they had written letters back to her. And a few years ago, we were in her attic, and we found the diaries that she kept and the letters from her sons that when they wrote her from the war. And so, you know, I read these letters. I just had tears running down my face. And I thought, I've got to write a song about this because I think it'll be moving and inspirational for people who maybe had similar experiences. And so that's the idea behind Letters from War, were the actual letters from my grandfather to my great-grandmother.
Wow, your grandfather, a couple of your uncles too, I would suppose?
Yeah, my great-uncles and my grandfather. And I'll tell you what was so interesting is, I knew, you know, my great uncles and my grandfather, of course, at Christmas time, we'd all sit around the table and, you know, to hear their stories and to hear them laugh. And that's what I remember about Christmas. And I just always thought these guys are heroes to me. They really were. They're about 75, 80 years old when I knew them. But their lives really became apparent. And I realized how much more of a hero they were to me when I read these letters from when they were 18, 19, 20 year olds, and just the affection they had for their mom, my great grandmother at the time, reading their letters was really moving to me, and it was really interesting to see who they were at 18 as opposed to who they were at 80, and it was really moving for me.
Of course, it kind of revealed another side of your own family and I guess your own past, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does because, again, to me, I start to see where I came from through these letters. And it made me very proud of the family that I have. And I was adopted when I was 2 weeks old into this family. And so even though I don't share a bloodline with my relatives, the fact that God chose this family for me, it's pretty awesome because I'm pretty honored to be in it.
Great. Mark, I know that we share a lot of respect and gratefulness for the military. Do you find any similarity between the feelings that your relatives experienced back in the First World, as opposed to the feelings and the emotions that our young military personnel is facing today?
I think so. You know, something that was really special for me in those letters was to see the emotion my grandfather and his brothers was to see the emotion, and you know they weren't sure what was going to happen with them. They hoped they came back safe, but they didn't know, and you could feel that in the letters. And just a few months ago, I had a general give me a call and invited me down to Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, mm-hmm. Texas. And the first thing that he showed me was on a Sunday morning, 10,000 airmen came into a chapel, and they all stood up as they began to play my video, Letters from War, the song, Letters from War.
Oh, my God.
They stood up, and they put their arms around each other, and they started singing the song along with the video, and it was just shaking the room. And he said, you know, this song's important to them because a lot of them don't know if they're going to make it home or not. But this song is very much an encouragement for them. So I could see, even though it's been several years between World War II and now where we are, that base feeling is the same. And both my grandfather and the young people today need to know that we're cheering for them here in the United States.
You know, you just told something very profound and dear to me, which is an element of faith. What kept this man alive? Because when you go to war, you don't know what's going to happen. And to faith, how is your faith shaping up your artistic experience?
Well, for me, you know, I'm a Christian person who writes songs and books, I guess, now. From the standpoint of through the lens of the way I see the world, and I hope people, when they read my book or when they read or when they listen to my music, they find not only a great story, but I hope they feel the elements of hope, and hope not in anything that they can do, but specifically what God can do and what a great God we serve. And so I hope they sense that in the book. In my heart, that the book and the songs will particularly will bring them closer to the heart of God.
And you are walking the talk, better say cycling the talk, because I know that you did a cycling tour also across America, and that came from an inspiration of a trip that you did to Mexico, didn't it?
Yeah, it was really neat. The James Fund is an organization that helps fund women, widows and orphans around the world. And they knew I was adopted and asked if I wanted to be the spokesman. And so they took me to Mexico and introduced me to a few orphanages. And I realized at that point in time I wanted to do more than just be a spokesman. And I thought, how can I raise more awareness for the James Fund and bring more awareness to the life of the orphan? And so I came home and I thought, man, we're going to do a tour this summer. What if I just pedaled my bike from California to Maine instead of taking a bus? And so we did, and we did about 15 concerts along the way and pedaled all the way across and raised about $250,000 for widows and orphans. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever done, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity.
Wow, that's truly amazing. You are a man of action. And it seems like your life is continuously progressing towards something bigger than yourself, because you engage yourself into finding what is your purpose in life through faith, through service to community. Do you consider yourself a philanthropist, an altruist person?
Well, you know, I think even bigger than that, you know, when I was adopted, that really resonated with me, because I feel like, gosh, there's more people who need to be adopted that maybe aren't, but would if they had the opportunity. And so I wanted to be a spokesperson for that. And now with this opportunity for the Army to encourage our servicemen and their families here, there was something in my past, you know, my great-grandmother and her sons, that really I wanted to honor them through this. And so I think as I walk through life, I find these things that resonate with me because of who I am. And I love that I can, you know, I heard a quote the other day that said, your life is too small a thing to make the point of your life. So I want to live in such a way that God is honored by the way I live and the things that I feel are important. And at the end of my life, I don't want to feel like, you know, I made myself the most important person to me that I possibly could. I would rather become less and make God bigger in all situations and honor him that way.
You know, you made me think about another interesting quote that it says, we're not important. What is important about us is our function, what we do, you know. And I see how you're doing that with your life. And I really, really appreciate you doing this, because there's so many people that they just take, you know, the easy road. And I, how many kilometers so did you complete it through your tour? Across America?
It was all the way across North America. And I don't know the kilometers, but I know it was about 4,000 miles. So maybe 8,000 kilometers.
Wow, that is truly amazing. And what are your future plans, Mark, where people can get information about your book?
The book came out about a week ago, and so they can find that in all outlets that booksellers, as well. If they want to go on and learn more about the book, they can go to markschultzmusic.com. Again, markschultzmusic.com, and follow along there to read to more about it, and that's my website if they want to learn more about concerts as well.
And you really want to portray in your music part of the American way. I see the goodness. I'm not from here, and I can relate with those principles of love, altruism, helping others, making good decisions. Those are very universal principles that you are, in a very clear way, you are putting in your music, in your books, and also in your life. And I'm truly honored to have you in our show today. And is there anything that you would like to tell our audience today, Mark?
I don't know that is. You've done a really good job. Tell me this. Where are you from originally?
I am from Colombia. Yes, I came here 20 years ago, and I love this country. This is my country. And there's nothing like this country around the world. And, I just love the values of the good American people, and I'm kind of old-fashioned, and I really love the way that you are. I saw the song when this child girl has to make a decision between having a child, her child or not, and it really spoke to me. And then we went to a purity concert, and it seems like we need to talk about those values, Mark. We need to really remember our generation, what the real deal is about, and you're definitely doing it. And I'm so proud that you're doing it, and I'm so grateful that you're doing it, because each one of us has to do our little part.
Yeah, that's right. It's that's exactly right, and I think these are the values that our country's based on, it's based out of love and giving back, and hopefully I'll get to be a part of that generation that's doing that, and it sounds like you're doing it as well. So I'm grateful to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for your time, and a lot of success, and keep doing what you're doing, because it's working for you and it's working for a lot of people. Thank you, Mark. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for being on Spiritual Engineering, the new science for happiness and extraordinary relationships. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. This
is beautiful.
And are you still there?
That was great.
I am? Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I watched this beautiful video when you... that was part of the interview that actually we don't want to play here. But, yeah, that was a very interesting interview. He's an amazing man. He's doing incredible things. And like you say to me, he's walking the walk, right?
That's right, and he is. And that we were going to play some of his music, but we're running out of time. And Mark is, you can catch him on his website, Mark Schultz, or you can catch him on MySpace, his Letters from War. And we only have... a time to get a few minutes here, and I'd like to remind people that you can make changes in your life. It is possible to make change, and you can do it. If those five factors for change are there, you can change anything about your life. So now we're going to sign off, and hopefully you'll be with us next week. Remember, you can catch our website, spiritualengineering.com, spiritualengineering.com. And have a great...
Thank you for experiencing Spiritual Engineering Radio. To connect with your show hosts, Thomas and Patricia Strausser, please visit www.spiritual-engineering.com. Spiritual Engineering Radio, building extraordinary relationships the 21st century.